Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Zero to Infinity. I'm joined by Vikram Vaidyanathan and Avnish Bajaj. I'm Chandrasekhar, CV here. And we have a very, very interesting conversation for you today. I want to give a little bit of the backstory. We were in SF, I want to say, at a restaurant. And I'd just come back from a couple of days, actually 10 days in China and a couple of weeks in the US. And I got really existential, right? AI was happening everywhere. I'd been to these massive factories in China. I'd seen all the AI founders in SF and I got into this phase of, you know, what are we going to do? And I did ruin your dinners. Apologies for that. But the good part…
Excellent sushi, which didn't taste very well after all the existential questions, and the sake tasted better. But before we go there, October 13th, happy birthday, Vikram.
Thank you.
Becoming an old man. Finally.
My age has remained the same for the last 5 years. And it is going to remain the same for the next five.
So that's the topic. The good part is we'll hopefully get a good podcast out of this. So the topic is, what is India's role in an AI-first world? Okay, so I'll set basic context on what I brought to the dinner table that day. So US has innovation and consumption. It has the best universities, IP, there's deep capital. The founders are young, thriving. They know how to build. So US is safe. China has got this mad industrial muscle, right? So it can… We went to factories that were able to build fully autonomous robots in what, 2 months, right? From funding. So China can obviously build everything at scale, super high quality, and hence China's fine as well. But if you look at India, we've always had an English-speaking population. We've had tech talent and we've had demographics on our side, which meant we could throw highly technical, capable labor at problems. However, LLM does the same. It does language really well. It does technology really well. And there is no labor anymore. Right? And that got me at least into a phase to say, you know, what is our right to win? And how do, as a nation, we sort of look at this and say, given this context, this is how we reorient ourselves and what are the new opportunities? Right? So that's basically the context. Provocatively, is India already behind in the AI race? And what do we sort of do from now to correct if required, right? So let's start there. I'll throw it straight into you. What's up?
Yeah. No, so CV, actually, jokes aside, it was a question that one started thinking and going very deep and realizing that let's give credit where it's due. China is the factory of the world, was always maybe berated for being like a low quality factory of the world. They are the best in the EV world for sure. Deep tech seem to be doing a great job. Amazingly seem to have been able to make themselves the AI factory as well. So give credit where it's due. And in fact, a little bit counter narrative to what was going on over the last few months. In fact, you sent me the BG2 podcast on China, China, China. And the reality is, although when you're in the US, you realize nobody really cares, other than when there is a trade war, but they have done something. The US has always been the best universities, so therefore the best innovation comes and you have to give credit. On the one hand, one can then say, wither India, you know, what is, where do we really stand? One must keep things in perspective. We have just about become a $4 trillion economy. So we haven't missed anything. There are only, there are stages where you can double down and we are there, but we must double down. So what's our biggest asset? What are we largest in the world? And there's no debate. People.
People.
So yeah. Let's use it.
Yeah.
Right? So what are the two constraints? And I'll let Vikram elaborate both of these. But when we were in the valley, we heard FDE. I hadn't heard this word before, which was coined by Palantir, which is forward deployed engineer. Basically being one of the constraints to get AI adoption in enterprises was, how do you actually integrate? Guess who's always had the best engineering talent in the world? We've been, you know, outsourcers before that. Then lately, I've also been thinking about and hearing about this data tagging. When you say RL, reinforcement learning in a model, when you say human in the loop in a model or in a deployment, it's actually also a person who is tagging stuff, where again, we have an edge. So I think of it as we must take advantage of the 2Ds, which is data and deployment, both of which can be built on top of our very large skilled population.
like Avi, you threw me into like a nice loop thinking about this question, and it actually was a fantastic rabbit hole to do research on and then come back and form thoughts. And I'm forgetting which report, but one of the consulting reports had a nice framework, which was essentially if you say, how can I break up the AI stack? So you say compute, the US is far ahead. They have the chips as well as the data centers then to back it up. Then there's models where they've actually thrown out the models. I think India has a big role to play in driving inferencing costs down for ourselves, and we'll come back to that. Then the third is the data. And I think there India can excel because we have a unusual and unique data and DPI stack, and we'll talk about that more. Yeah. And the final thing is talent. And if you look at, you know, there was this very widely discussed MIT survey on adoption of AI, and everybody is just unhappy with where it is. And we're sort of heading into that trough of disillusionment when you're adopting a new technology. And all of us have adopted it in our lives. And then you're suddenly like, hey, it's not learning fast enough. Hey, it's not actually doing all the things that I really thought it could do. At the enterprise level, this problem is even more. And that's why this MIT survey. Mm-hmm. Because you're suddenly saying, okay, you know what, the pilot works. But then I look, go try to deploy this at scale in the organization. And oh God, nothing is working. I don't have these, you know, miraculous thousands of agents running around in the org and doing the work. So it's just not working. And the gap is essentially integrations, plumbing, a lot of the boring, messy, but beautiful work that always Indian companies have done. Whether it was the first wave of Y2K, whether it was the next wave of mobile, whether it was the next wave of cloud, and so it's going to be the same. Yeah. There is this big gap, and somebody needs to come in and do the boring, but beautiful stuff. And that might involve humans in the loop, that might involve assurance, that involves security, that involves just building all the plumbing and wiring. It's really boring, but it's needed in order to actually get these deployments at scale. So I think that's one place where we can play a big role and we should actually focus.
Yeah.
That's on the B2B front. On the B2C front in India, I do think that we have the largest market for adoption. We are already seeing that with GPT. You're already seeing that with voice. If you see one barrier to adoption in India, it's the same with all the previous waves. It's cost. There is an India cost to adoption. You have a Jio moment and it goes boom, right? Jio plus demon. And I think we're heading towards some of that. And I think we can accelerate that, which will then accelerate demand and adoption on the B2C front in India. And I know we're going to dig into that. So at least for me, it was the sort of these two things that we have a big role to play in global B2B and adoption and fixing this, you know, choke point that you have in sort of promise versus delivery.
Yeah.
And then on B2C, it's essentially how do we drive the cost down such that we just enable this at scale or at India population scale market.
Clearly, you guys have done your homework. So let's then choose what we'll cover. Let's cover deployment and what that means. Let's go deeper into data. I like the point you're saying on India to India and how that stack should look different. And then I will push the point on can we be truly globally relevant, right? So let's start with deployment first. And here again, when you're saying all of this stuff, it still kind of feels, you know, very back office-y and feels like there's this sort of, yeah, we'll do the plumbing. We've always done it. We'll be good at it. Hopefully we'll still win the FDE race because of that. But can we flip that on its head? Can we now make the argument to say, because of AI, India can potentially move away from just back office and sort of behind the wall to maybe even front line, because AI can enable a layer of security, a layer of intelligence that allows for this interface between India to the world. So I guess that's number one. Can we now move away from back office to front line, and what does that look like?
Wonderful opportunity. By the way, on the flight in, I was with the India country manager of a large consulting firm. And on the one hand, you know, the narrative that we are all reading, including with our IT services companies, is employment is declining.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they have a GCC, a Global Capability Center. I was asked, so they have gone from 0 to 700 in 2 years. They are looking to go from 700 to 1200 in the next year. Currently 150 engineers. in the incremental 500, 250 more engineers. So this is starting to happen. It's so exciting. So historically, the IT services wave started with in the late 80s, thanks to Mr. Narayan Murthy, compounded a bit in the 90s and really took off actually with Y2K being an inflection point, and then through the 2000s. They are facing headwinds, yeah. Right? We used to get panned globally, I would say, and partly for the right reason, saying body shopping business, low value add. Yet, the flip is, you look at the best engineers and even tech CEOs in the US and they're all Indian. That gap, by the way, even pre-AI, over the last decade was starting to bridge. We have some of our best companies being started in India, whether it is Atomic Work, SuperOps, Rocket Lane, I can go on, catering to the world. I think that the fact that that mindset shift had happened, the timing was right, and now you layer AI on top, right? So for me, it's actually very exciting. It can be, not can be, it is highly value additive, where you are actually helping deploy the solution.
Yeah.
So I think you would not just, earlier, by the way, even in the, until about four or five years ago, I used to hear Indians are very good with product and PLG, but are poor with GTM. I think that will also change. And essentially, what is a forward deployed engineer? It is product plus GTM or tech plus GTM.
Yeah.
I do think that it requires us as players in the ecosystem as well as the government. And maybe it's part of the AI mission and something we will also evangelize to take this very seriously. Because just zooming out, we spoke about China exporting goods and now potentially being the factory of the world even in deep tech and AI.
Yeah.
US always being the consumption market and the innovation market. India having now a clear supply side edge where we should be the talent and data exporters. And by the way, going back to the local market, Perplexity, we are already number one. ChatGPT, GitHub, we are number two. So a lot of this is coming into place. And for me, it's a great, exciting...
But make that real, Avi. So what could happen? I know we were discussing stuff around healthcare, medical agents and all of that. What does moving to frontline kind of look like, right?
So let's actually put meat on the bone. So if you look at healthcare, we actually have a very large population which has sadly, all kinds of diseases. Historically, by the way, this has been leveraged by CRO and clinical research organizations. You could actually put it on steroids with AI because this data tagging, and essentially imagine a factory that is sitting and tagging data. And by the way, some of that is already happening.
Yeah.
It is not happening in India, but it is happening. I think there should be a little bit more enabling regulation around where we basically say, Mr. Modi keeps saying, come and make in India.
Yeah.
Come and make your medicines in India. Come and make XYZ in India. Make your electronics in India. It should be come and train your models in India.
Yeah.
All this data tagging. Yeah. And we have enabling regulation plus enabling skilling. So that's on the data side. On the engineering side, think of the IT services boom. You are fortunately not young enough for it. So you would remember all these training institutes just everywhere. Come and get certified. Come and get certified. NIIT, Aptech, these were large chains. But almost every corner had certification.
Yeah.
Then came the internet boom. In the internet boom, every corner had a cyber cafe. Yeah. Can you imagine just AI training? My household help son, he has come to Mumbai to learn computer science. He came home I tried to mentor him every once in a while. And he was saying, bhaiya, AI ML mein interest hai, par humko bol rahe hai, wo digital marketing karo, cyber security. I said, just two things. Get skills in these two areas. Both of them are going to boom.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the kind of pull it can have from the tier two, tier three, tier four cities, but needs more work?
Yeah. I think it does supercharge.
It has to be on mission basis.
Yeah. I think it does supercharge our ability to service the world from India by having the right sort of trained professionals, opening up an online channel.
Yeah.
So we may just look at this
just the expansion of TAM just with this, right? So selling services, right? Essentially solving somebody else's problem. Then we started selling products and software.
Yeah.
Right. I think with this trend line, you're essentially able to own outcomes within an organization. You can essentially say one agentic outcome end to end. And I think there is this term going around, which is services as a software.
Yeah.
Software as a services was you could just send the software from the cloud and you just paid for bits of it. This is the other way around. This is essentially services on the cloud and it's integrated with software. And so if you actually have people who can actually own these agentic outcomes and handing off between essentially a human in the loop to a virtual agent, back to the human in the loop seamlessly, that's what it takes to get to a 99.99% agentic outcome. That's when somebody in healthcare is going to deploy it. Otherwise, they're not going to deploy it.
Yeah.
Because that's when they're going to be able to solve mission critical problems.
And you've started seeing some of this already.
You're starting to see that, especially in the AI plus services space. You're seeing this with financial services companies. You're seeing it with finance consulting. You're starting to see that with some boring processes which can be automated 85-90%.
Yeah.
And then you need the human in the loop.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing that, right? You're seeing that with KPOs and BPOs already. But you can see, as this gets more sophisticated, you will be able to run much larger outcomes, right? And it's not like India has not been doing this. We were taking a very small outcome, which is a contact center, low level.
Yeah.
But you can take that same thing with AI engineers on steroids to own much larger outcomes in the organization. So this FDE, which is a forward deployed engineer, is an example of something like that. Because you're essentially solving for adoption, you're solving for that outcome and implementation at scale while building your own product. So obviously companies like Palantir and Ramp have been phenomenal at it. But I do think that this entire AI space might really need a lot of FTEs around that. We have a pod coming with some of our founders who are actually deploying FTEs. So,
you know, so I hadn't put it in that framework the way Vikram just did. But if you think about it in the life cycle of AI, let's start very early. We talk about training and inferencing. There you have data tagging, what companies like Scale and all have done in the US, and there are many more. So there's a big opportunity there. If you look at the hierarchy of skill sets, probably at the lower level, we've always done medical transcription. We have always done data entry. Think of that at a more intelligent layer. Then at the next, to get software adopted, FDEs, right? So then this human in the loop, which is exception handling, which is the 15-20%, which we have always done through BPOs and KPOs, but maybe sometimes as the front line. I think now actually instead of two, there are three roles we are talking about here.
Yeah.
And if you go deeper, I'm sure, you know, one can come up with more, and we have the edge there.
So let's get into that stack. And it's always been, data is the new oil was last decade's phrase. Now it's more about the refinery. So let me actually pressure test the argument you guys are making on data, right? Yes, we have tons of people and medical data, et cetera. But what can you truly build of value from it, right? And I know you've looked at it in many angles. You looked at financial services. You looked at what data can do for you from a AI, SaaS, agentic platform. How do you look at up-leveling data from just being, you know?
So yes, we have 1.5 billion people. We've digitized a lot of them, close to 1 billion of them, and you have their data. And so you've created this enormous footprint. But what is unique about this, and you see what, you know, DPA has done and so on, is that it's almost tailor-made for AI. It's almost prescient in the way it was architected.
Yeah.
Because it's this unique identifier, which is CV, is this unique identifier that's connected to his data. And then that data is connected by a consent layer. So it's the first consent-based, frictionless way of accessing your data. So therefore, you can actually architect unique agents, which are CV's agents, which actually, based on CV's consent, can actually give you this, you know, holy grail of unique companions and unique experiences, which no one else has architected in the world. So it is actually a very unique opportunity, very unique point in time data stack, which no one else has had ever, right? So yes, right now it is mostly financial data and identity data. Therefore, it's geared toward the financial services ecosystem.
Yeah.
But the same thing applies for education. Same thing applies for healthcare. And I think some of those experiments on the health stack and so on didn't take off as much as we thought, like UPI.
Mm.
But I think with AI, because those are slightly, you know, more involved consumer journeys. Those are possible with AI, and therefore some of the richness in the healthcare stack can also be brought about.
What's the role of government in that, Vikram? How does it happen?
At scale intervention that is needed in the way that this happened with DPI in the first place, which is digital public infrastructure for anyone who didn't. And that India Stack project, which led to UPI, which led to AA, we really need an intervention at that scale in order to actually make all of this possible. I think there are already pockets of it. I mean, we always had, you know, progressive institutions. We have volunteers in the India Stack. So it is happening, but it is not a movement that is happening at scale like the way it happened with DPI and UPI and so on. So I'll give you one example. RBI has actually put out a free AI policy white paper. It's actually very detailed. And anybody who is building in fintech and AI has to read it and engage now. Yeah. Because you can't later say that they didn't do it. Because they have put something out. It is your fault if you don't engage. And you have to engage now. And they are highlighting risks and fears. They are highlighting auditability as a fear. They are highlighting accountability as a risk. And you have to solve them today. And you can actually engage.
Yeah.
So it's both. Yes, we need that intervention. But when some of these are coming out, as an ecosystem, we have to really dive in and not just wait.
Yeah. So let's stick to that India to India topic, right? And you guys are bringing out two interesting points. One is the data layer. Many interesting points. Well,
he'll let the viewers judge that.
Okay. So there's one clearly around data, and we're saying DPI, UPI, what's the next wave? And I'm sure the government's sort of on it as well. But there's also the separate piece around AI can help change modality of communication. So we at least keep talking about this internally in our consumer team to say the UI UX that we imported from the US has maybe potentially resulted in Bharat staying out of it.
Yeah. Right?
The UI UX of China is very different in their consumer apps. And India is still very US-like.
Yeah.
And that serves India one really well,
yeah,
but not really Bharat in that sense.
Yeah.
And it's always been too expensive to throw people at the problem.
Yeah.
However, now that we've got AI, LLMs and voice, everything sort of supercharged right now. The question is, with voice modality, with one-on-one personalized communication, which wasn't possible earlier, does the Bharat stack finally completely evolve to look like something else?
Yeah.
Right.
And you tell me. So let me pose this to you. What is other than SEC and per capita income? What are the biggest gaps that prevent us from being one singular or ease of national footprint of a lot of these kind of apps? And
so language is one. I do feel that.
What happens with AI?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What is the other?
I think there's this part around a large part of the explanation that we get from our apps is easy to read. It's a large chunk of text that we're okay consuming.
Yeah.
I don't think Bharat's okay consuming large paragraphs.
They probably are intimidated, right? So language, you mentioned language, literacy, right? The tech savviness. At some stage, right now, by the way, my wife is still intimidated by ChatGPT. So these interfaces need to change. To your point, therein lies a massive opportunity. Can you dumb this down? I think the beauty of, I don't know, but if I were to hazard a guess, the most used apps in Bharat would be what? Amongst the big ones? WhatsApp for sure.
UPI.
UPI to is a utility. UPI and Aadhaar are utilities. You can't live without them. But my guess is YouTube, WhatsApp, because they're dumb now.
Absolutely.
And that's maybe not the right way to say it. But the reality is the barrier to adoption is low.
Yeah.
Because we have to recognize. So can this become the tool to accelerate literacy and digital adoption? And I think our government has been number one in the world in terms of pushing the agenda of digital. And I think this is what we were all waiting for.
Yeah.
And I think it can make it very, very accessible. And it can equalize that there is still a digital divide.
Yeah.
There is still a digital divide. And I think AI can bridge it.
Accessibility across, not just data. So to your point, how does Bharat currently access legal services? It's close to impossible.
Yeah.
Who do I talk to? I don't have anybody I can quickly check. Yeah. Hey, what's up? Or it could be simple things around filing your tax. Right?
Yeah.
It could be many things like that where I feel they've been sort of underserved. What are you seeing?
So let's build on that, right? So how did technology sort of become ubiquitous in India? If you had adopted the US or global model, it would have never happened.
Yeah.
Because you essentially got smartphones at a cost that nobody dreamt it was possible.
Yeah.
You got mobile data at a cost with this Jio movement that nobody thought was possible. And boom, suddenly it is everywhere. And then you could then build DPI and all of this, right? So you just had to do this at a different cost. And then people thought these would never make money. But then at our population scale, suddenly the unit economics starts working. Doesn't work with a scale of 10 million, 20 million. But at half a billion people, suddenly it starts working.
Yeah.
So I do think that there is power in thinking about inferencing in the same way. Because you bring the cost of inferencing down to that.
Yeah.
Then the power of everything that you're saying, which is the power of actually enabling conversations for someone who's never had that kind of education, suddenly they come up the education work, education curve in a tremendously fast way, right? Because we've seen it with ourselves. There might be a topic that we know nothing about. And then you start engaging and suddenly you're actually able to do things that, that you weren't able to do, or, you know, sit down and code, which you never done.
Yeah.
And then suddenly build a project out of nowhere, right? And you can see that happening. But in order to do that, I think we do need to think about saying, okay, can you get this inferencing? I remember there was this, data cost 1 GB down to 1 rupee or some number that we articulated, and we said we have to get it down there. That's what we have to do for inferencing tokens. And I'm saying this carefully, that inferencing token, not just not training, because we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Because just inferencing token is enough in order to actually break down this adoption barrier of app and all that. Just have a voice interface, somebody's talking, and then you're learning at that scale. I'll give you an example of that in financial services. And I was at the Global FinTech Fest last week, and we were all brainstorming. And someone, Rajiv Ahuja, I have to give him credit, ED of RBL Bank, said, you know, one of the opportunities to do this is go back to the bank branch of the past. The bank branch of the past was that you walked in, the teller would recognize you. They would start talking to you. They would understand your problem. Most likely, they couldn't solve your problem.
Yeah.
They would call somebody else. They would call the branch manager of loans. And that branch was a self-sufficient unit.
Yeah.
They knew the customer. They would take decisions. And it became like a source of community.
Yeah.
That's possible now.
Absolutely.
Because you walk into like a AI branch of one, which is your unique experience. And then you're, because that is can make independent decisions, because it knows you really well, suddenly you have that same community experience which has been lost in this large monolith, right? So that's what's possible if we can get to this.
Yeah. And just to zoom out and reiterate, we have done this before. It started all the way back with EVMs, the voting machines. Mm. We are still the largest at scale and other countries have adopted. UPI and Aadhaar. So it has been done. And I think this is a massive opportunity for much more broader inclusion as well as multiplication.
And just for those folks thinking, is it worth it to build? I would just like to point out here that of all the India One solutions that we've built, Meesho is the profitable commerce player. So is there a profit pool to be unlocked? Absolutely. You just need to be able to speak to the right folks at the right cost in some form, which both of you guys were alluding to. Let's shift gears. So, okay, Bharat, so we will win. India to the globe. Can we be truly world-class at something? And I was surprised, Vibi, you had mentioned that a lot of our companies are already sort of taking over. So why don't we start there? What are you seeing, India to the globe, global maxima? How are we sort of changing how we play?
We have a very successful company in our investment in our previous fund, MoEngage. Those founders were just heading out while we were coming in. And they had a phenomenal model. They were mobile first. They built sort of locally, India, Southeast Asia, and then went to the globe. And that period took 2, 4, 5 years, right? And you had that time. They're now a global company, global leader. And so they can respond to this. But that playbook, you can't do anymore. Mm. You need to be global from day zero. And that's what we're seeing with all of our companies. This has now become a global market. You need to be a global company, global founder in order to win that global market, which essentially means that on day zero, you're here, you're in the US, it's sort of everywhere, everything everywhere all at once.
Yeah.
And we've seen that with our companies, right? They're going after global maxima problems. So you take a company like Atomic Work, they're going after essentially a very large market that in ITSM, where you know you obviously have a large incumbent like ServiceNow, many others as well. So they're essentially saying that large market, what we are going to build in the US and have a team in the US, which has the best of the US with a large engineering team in India. And not back-end. It is real engineering team in India. Similarly with Rocket Lane. One founder in the US, two founders in India. Same thing we're seeing with others like AMP and so on. It's both a unique opportunity, but there is some con to it, right? Because the if you just have a team here in India, the India team is underexposed to the AI cycles. Mm. It's 2-day cycles, 7-day cycles, right? That we are all living.
Yeah.
And so if you're not exposed to that, then you're like, oh, you know, is there enough exposure to them? So the US team needs to provide them that exposure. And then but the India team has a big advantage. You have a talent base that you can, is competitive in the India ecosystem, but you're not competing with that talent base in the AI hype cycle there. Mm. And in some ways, blocking out the noise, we are seeing that they're able to ship faster, deploy faster, and have this AI plus services thing going where you're able to get to those 95% plus, 99% plus type outcome deployments because they're also pulling in services at the same time. So we are believers in this global companies, India Edge, and we're seeing this India Edge emerging in different parts of our portfolio.
Yeah.
And I think founders overall should be doubling down on it.
Yeah. And from what I'm hearing from you, they've also done like, the question was always, can they do GTM? But clearly they can. And they're going against the best in the world. So that's really heartening to see. Any thoughts?
Yeah. So you and I had a podcast, I think, with Akash earlier in the year, and I was depressed.
I have this impact on you.
Yes. So, and it seemed like the gap was widening. You know, we were hearing all of the, actually it was around the DeepSeek moment, which was China has reached there, US, we are hearing so much, what is happening? I think it's all changed in the last 8-9 months. So in DVC, we were all there together.
Yeah.
We have 45 investments. And actually there's a new emerging thought I haven't discussed with either of you guys, which was, so we also spoke about the India Edge. The India Edge on the supply side, we have spoken of enough, FDEs, human in the loop, data. There is an emerging India demand edge, right? So we are second largest so supply edge, of course, number two on GitHub also. Demand edge, number two for ChatGPT, number one for Perplexity. So if I am that founder and I want an innovation hub where I can make low cost experiments, remember, we always used to have decent adoption, never at global scale where we were ranked, maybe outside of Facebook or WhatsApp. We were never at that global scale, and WhatsApp was a very Android India feature, right? Today, this is not because of Android. It's just the adoption at scale of these products with monetization as well. So earlier you could experiment in India, but you could never test monetization. Now you can do both. And of course, Android, you can experiment with. So to me, what may change is that we would normally say if your end market is the US, go to the US immediately. Of these 45 companies, many founders have. And it's, by the way, inspiring. We met a bunch of them. You know, we used to get FOMO watching these blogs come through that the new scaling is 1 million to... between 5 to 10 million within between 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Like, that's ain't going to happen. It's happening. It's happening in our portfolio, right? Companies starting in Jan at 1, ending the year, December, let's say between 5 and 7 or 8. So that's very exciting to see, but that's all US. Mm. Many of them started here and moved within 3, 4, 5 months. If we are also becoming a demand hub, maybe that's also going to change next year. Maybe that's what's going to change next year, that many of these guys will say, okay, I am going to go into a red ocean of GTM. let me perfect my playbook here and then go.
Yeah.
Now, that will depend on your end market. So, Confido, which is healthcare, yes, you have to be in the US because that's a different market, right? But in other verticals, maybe, and maybe with the agentic stuff, you will actually see for the first time trying to actually perfect it here, reaching 1-2 million and then going. Who knows?
Yeah. So let's, we're coming near the end of the session. I want to quickly give like a rapid fire, 3-point answers for each incumbent. What advice, incumbent stakeholder, what advice would you give? So I've chosen, if we could suggest something to the government, what would that be? Answers from the both of you. If you could choose something for VCs, which is basically what would you tell us to look at? And where are we looking at? What would that be? And the third is incumbents as well.
What about to founders?
The rest of the podcast. please refer to the previous part of the podcast.
No, but I was just thinking what has changed in the last maybe 4 or 5 days is this whole launch of ChatGPT. What are they called? The embedded agents, right? So Spotify is integrated. Yeah. We are still where we were 9 months ago sitting here saying, can you book travel end to end?
Yeah.
There's a massive opportunity. And coming back to this point of ChatGPT's second largest market is now India. Build that travel agent here. Make sure, and by the way, that will be wherever you need pipes in the back, it will be market specific.
Yeah.
But I just feel that even with those agents, it's still a very DOSy interface. And I do think founders should be saying, everything seems to be getting ready.
I think that's an interesting point. So basically, the point that you're bringing up is it's not just a B2B or an enterprise kind of play. The question is, why not just build consumer apps, AI first for them?
I think it's ready. It's getting ready.
I think these consumer journeys, we are starting to see some of them. We have a company called Ulka, which is a AI consumer journey for low income financial services users. And you're seeing someone who is very diffident in going into a bank. So think of somebody in a small, you know, tier 3 town, very diffident about going into a bank or an NBFC because they're not treated well, right? You and I are treated very differently when I walk in. And suddenly they are having a 15-minute conversation with this and actually upgrading the score, having the power to go and actually choose the loan that they want. I think it's incredibly empowering. And I had this thought that finally this AI could actually make these things fairer, not just smarter and faster, right? Because you can actually have fair underwriting, because I keep wondering that my driver who's can be employed with me for 15, 20 years, very high stability, will not get access to the loan. Or somebody even working in our office will not get the kind of loans that we do, even though they're very stable, because they don't get that service. So I think it could be incredibly fairer as well. You said something about DOSy interface. What is DOSy?
DOS.
MS-DOS.
MS-DOS. Which is where you have to type, I think, ChatGPT much as we love the company. And the,
even I know what is DOS.
Yeah. But actually, let's come...
Before we get to vacuum tubes.
Yeah. So we've had this discussion in various threads. I do think it's important to reiterate. iPhone launched 2007. App Store launched 2009. Effectively, what ChatGPT has done has launched an app store. Where it likely goes, I was reading an article this morning, is that this is the infrastructure for their hardware device. Point is, when things become ready, somebody doesn't stand up and say, hey, I'm ready.
Yeah.
You have to watch the trends and say, hey, maybe now this is ready. Because sometimes you can be too early and get frustrated, right? I think the readiness moment is here. Whether that hardware device comes or not, lot of infra is coming in, and I do think we should have an app where we should be able to do end-to-end booking in India of travel, of almost anything, right? So I do think that readiness moment is here.
I agree. Okay, let's start with you. Government, 3 things you can tell them.
Hey, number one thing is we have to trigger this inferencing moment, right? Mm. It is a chicken and egg problem because you don't have inferencing at low cost. People are not deploying at scale, and because you're not deploying at scale, you don't have the inferencing at low cost. So we need to break that. So my one big thing would be to really trigger that inferencing moment at scale. It will require investment on this. The second is use this unique power that India has of having this of DPI plus this data consent layer, I think it's a power nobody on the planet has. Mm. And if we do this thing, which is, you know, we focus on deployments at scale globally, plus we actually figure out how to use our data stack, I think big things will happen. Mm. This virtuous loop, things will emerge. We can actually become sort of the adoption playbook or the AI. We can't export the chips. We can't export the infrastructure.
Yeah.
But I think we can export the playbook then at scale.
I would say layering on top, national skill development mission should become AI enabled. Mm. The government is doing so much. So, you know, if you have semiconductor mission, huge success, EV, huge success, you get PLIs, you get incentives if you even design in India. So lots of good things are in place. Government was paying for internships. I think it should all get included in some kind of a skill development mission where, for example, you train 100 people in AI and you get some incentive. Mm. I think what I would love to see proliferate over the next 5 years is actually all those Nukkadka training institutes where kids like my household health son is walking in and saying, I have been trained in AI. Main abhi FDE ban sakta hun. That would be just awesome.
And what about yourself? How have you changed your mental models? What should VCs look at differently as they invest in this trend line?
I think we have become clearer about the fact that it is happening with India also. Mm. I think at one point, you can just sit there and say, okay, fine, this is a US China. It's not. Entrepreneurship has picked up. Beyond a point, you can't ignite it. We have to back it. I think there's just a sobering piece that I want to make sure as VCs we remember is that with the rapid adoption of AI, you do see revenues, but those revenues can be, you know, fleeting. It's called phantom ARR or ERR, experimental revenue. The other piece, and I know it's really up Vikram's alley as well, is I do think there is a day zero of cybersecurity again because of AI. And we have never played a strong role as a country in it because we never had local issues. We didn't have a local deep market. Israel, for example, has been on top of it. All of those things apply to us now. Mm. So could we actually be a much stronger player in the second phase of cybersecurity, which is AI-led?
You know, this podcast at least threw me into a nice reflective zone. And I was thinking about India VCs, where have we actually hit big successes? We have hit big successes not by following the US playbook.
Mm.
Whenever, and you know, Avi came back and, you know, set up a firm, Bazi modeled on US successes, it was a different time. That didn't succeed, but it had to be made for India models. Very mobile-led, very low cost. That's where we hit a whole bunch of successes, which was made in India for India model. So, I think we have to go back to that thought process. I think the AI wave has hit us. And we are like, okay, this is a global world, whole new world. But in all of those, we have found an India edge to actually both building in India. And now I think for me, the most exciting part is also building in India for the world. And so it's looking for that unique opportunity and the unique advantage versus saying, this is what the market is giving us. So that's what we'll take.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think we also have to rewire our mindset to say, we're looking for that India edge because that's what's made investments and companies successful for us.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I'm just going to wrap up with what I took back at least, right? So US will keep innovating and China can industrialize, but India can deploy at scale. And that is a superpower that we've done well, but we can do even better now and capture more of the value chain because we can deploy, capture end-to-end services in some form. But it requires us to reskill our talent. It requires us to have a robust sort of India mission, data mission, something that helps us get to that place. And it also requires us to think a little bigger. Fortunately, our founders have started that already. India can take over the world and it's time to play offense. So I guess we should stop recording here.
Sounds good.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.